Hello, my name is Armando, and welcome to The Plant Nook. What's up, plant fam? it's nice to say that again, honestly. It's been one of the things I've been missing the most in the last like year, essentially, that I've been sort of on an extended hiatus. If you didn't know, I moved from New York to Colorado to start grad school. I am currently in the second year of my master's, but I do plan on continuing with my PhD at some point. I also work at a florist here in Colorado, and I am the greenhouse supervisor. I was going to talk about that at some point, but right now we are in the middle of getting ready for Valentine's Day. I know by the time you listen to this, it's going to be only January 21st. However, in a florist, it's about a month before when you start really like prepping the space for Valentine's Day. Everything has been pre-booked, pre-ordered, all that fun stuff way in advance. But now we have to get the space ready because it is a production. I was in the florist last Valentine's Day last year, so I have some experience, and I can tell you, it is, oh my god, it's a hoot and a half, to say the least. It's a fun time. I do enjoy it. But also, by the time you are listening to this, I would have started the first week of the semester would have just ended here in school. So far I'm digging the one class that I am taking. It's a lot of fun. It's a sort of a professional development sort of course where we learn about the grad program, the grad school, how we sort of navigate through becoming a professional and all that stuff. So it's actually quite important. It's actually a really interesting class that I believe should honestly be required for any of the grad students in this school to take. It's already been pretty helpful to help navigate pretty much the department itself, and it's only been the first week. So it is well worth my time, honestly, despite working full-time as well and being a full-time graduate student. It is well worth the time to take a course like this. And plus, it gets you a chance to talk to other people in your cohort and make connections, network some more, all that fun stuff, right? So, this week, I wanted to dive a little deeper on green roofs. So, if you don't remember, back in episode 46, I talked a little bit about green roofs. Basically, I did like a little rough research on what I believe green roofs were like, and sort of what I think they are. So now, after a full year of researching green roofs and learning way more than I ever thought, even taking a class on green roofs specifically, I went back, listened to episode 46, and sort of judged, I guess, myself on the knowledge that I discovered with green roofs. So, just so we sort of have a basis of where I'm coming from now, one, my research is on rooftop agrivoltaics, so I did need to learn extensively about what green roofs are and how the system functions. On top of that, I took a class that my advisor taught, which is green roof culture, so learning the ins and outs of green roofs and creating green roofs and whatnot. And then on top of that, there's an organization called Green Roofs for Healthy Cities, and it is a national, technically it's an international organization, and it's all about green roofs and living architecture. We do talk about green walls, but green roofs are sort of the main focus. And they have an accreditation program where you can become a green roof professional or a GRP. And it is about a year, it's a little less than a year long accreditation program. And I started it, I want to say last January, it's about a year ago. And then I found out that I passed the exam, passed the class, and am now a certified GRP. Found that out in October in our little conference called Cities Alive in Philadelphia. So I have pretty extensive green roof knowledge at this point. There's always, always going to be more to learn. I have a broad idea of the entirety of the system. Specifically, as a horticulturalist, I'm going to be pretty much focusing mainly on the plants themselves on the green roof. However, I do know the entire system and how it functions and the capabilities, if you will, of a green roof. But the nice thing about what I'm doing is I am researching the capabilities of a green roof. So I'm sort of working on new ideas, pushing the boundaries as much as I can on green roofs. So, of course, take everything I say with a grain of salt. It might be, depending on where you're listening, the regulations might be different, the information might be different. So don't like use my word as gospel, if you will, right? And like I said, it's only been a year, really. It's only been 1 year. My advisor is going to be including me on some green roof projects at some point, like as in like consultations of people who want to put green roofs on a building, and she likes to include her grassroots when she can. So hopefully, I will be able to do that with her and get more experience, but as well as, you know, maybe becoming an actual consultant. That's the word I'm looking for, is consultant. So that's sort of my experience currently. Also, fun fact, I'm on the board of Green Roofs for Healthy Cities now. It just happened a week ago from this when this recording goes live. So, ta-da! Okay. So, in this episode, one of the first things I opened up with was talking about the history of green roofs. Now, I said that they are relatively young, about a couple of decades old, sprang into contemporary buildings in the early 2000s. I wanted to clarify that point. They came into contemporary buildings in the early 2000s here in North America. Over in Europe, they have been using green roofs and doing research on green roofs since about the 70s. Europe is far more advanced in terms of their application and their research, comparative to the US and North America in general. And actually, a lot of us here as GRPs and people in the industry, there is a guideline that comes out of Germany. I cannot pronounce it for the life of me, but if you're interested, it is the FLL guidelines to green roofs. That is sort of across the board what Europe uses to ensure that the green roofs are up to standard. We're sort of trying to come up with those as well. The only difference, at least in the States, in the United States, is that each state can come up with their own guidelines. So it gets a little fuzzy depending on where you are and what your local ordinances allow. So it can get a little fuzzy with that. But generally speaking, a lot of the green roof developers and green roof professionals base all of our insight on the FLL guidelines that come out of Germany. So yeah, Europe has been doing it for much, much longer than us, but there have been records of green roofs dating all the way back to ancient times. Think of one of the seven wonders of the old world, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. I don't have an exact date as to when we believe, because no one actually knows as to when the Hanging of Gardens of Babylon actually existed, or even if they existed, but they have been mentioned in multiple documents ranging anywhere from ancient Greece and ancient Rome. So there are mentions of the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, which would have been on top of the roofs, on walls, all that fun stuff. So in general, green roofs and green infrastructures have been around for thousands of years, dating from the Babylonians, that's it, to thatched roofs or sod roofs. Scandinavia, area of Europe, have used sod roofing for decades. And even in the early times here in the United States, sod roofs were also used in the Midwest when trees and lumber were pretty scarce. So there is a history of green roofs, but green roofs as we know it today would have started about in the 70s in Europe and the early 2000s here in the United States. I also said that green roofs are usually, they usually consist of like trays and mats, but which is true. You can do fitted trays, you can do sort of like sod mats or whatever, but it does highly depend on what you plan on what the green roof is going to be. So if it's going to be just a green roof, no one has access to it, your modular trays might be your best bet. Sod mats might be your best bet, just because it's going to be the least amount of maintenance and probably the quickest to put up. But if you're looking for like a park kind of vibe, you know, think I mentioned in episode 46, the High Line in New York, which, by the way, I said it was not a green roof. It is a green roof. High Line is a green roof. Like the way that that's sort of built, which is how a lot of green roofs are built, especially intensive ones. They are basically gigantic garden beds, if that makes sense. They're going to be lined, usually by metal or stone. Typically, it's like metal flashings that sort of border off the green roof itself that contain the substrate. Because generally, those kinds of places where there's going to be park access, you're going to want to have some walkways. So they're going to be blocked off somehow. So metal flashings, stone cropping walls. I don't know what that means. Stone walls. I was going to say outcropping. That's what I was going to say. But like, you know, some form of barrier or wall to divvy up where the walkway is and where the green roof itself is. And that can contain the medium that you use to grow the green roof. So, well, to grow the plants on the green roof, I should say. So that could be really anything. It's not just modular trays or mats. Usually, especially if it's a big one, some form of like quote unquote garden beds, where you put the medium in there and then you can either put plugs, you could do seeds. Seeds don't really work that well though, as far as I'm finding out in my research personally. Direct seeding doesn't work too well on green roof medium. Green roof medium that you use usually is some form of expanded aggregate, lightweight aggregate. So think like LECA, expanded shale, something like that. That is the bulk and the majority of the medium. Sometimes it could be anywhere between 60 to 70% of just some form of lightweight aggregate. Then you can put filler in like perlite, and then some compost, but it's mostly lightweight aggregate. This is going on a rooftop. You don't want the medium to be too heavy. If it's too heavy, the building below it can collapse. But before you do put the green roof on, you obviously have to make sure that the building is sound. I mentioned a little bit about that, you know, putting it on contemporary buildings. You do need to retrofit older buildings. Have a structural engineer get in there, make sure that it can actually hold the weight that you plan this green roof will be. And you have to make sure that it's the saturated weight of the medium, not the dry weight. So you got to make sure that the building itself can hold onto the roof. Otherwise, it will collapse. I also said that there were two types of green roofs, extensive versus intensive. Currently, there are people that are trying to redefine the labels, if you will, of the green roofs. Extensive and intensive was sort of a weird translation that didn't really make too much sense. That's at least that's what some people believe. So we're trying to come up with a better way to describe them. But basically, extensive is anything below the medium depth would be below 6 inches. Semi-intensive usually ranges like the part of the medium might be the green roof might be below 6 inches, but then goes above 6 inches. So at least from what I'm seeing so far, semi-intensive can be anywhere. It has like varying differences in depths throughout the green roof that go from below 6 and then above 6. And then intensive is 6 inches and above of depth of medium. So I think that actually, never mind, I lied. The plants that that are used, honestly, it could be pretty much any plant that you desire. I kind of said everything that people usually use are like really herbaceous, small plants. You can have trees, but that's if you have the big enough medium. I went to the children's green roof, the Mordecai Children's Garden in Denver, Colorado, at the Botanic Gardens. And y'all, there were trees, full-grown ass trees on this green roof, okay? Granted, the green roof itself is built on top of a parking garage, so there is a lot of structural strength to that, so it can withstand all that. But yo, if you've never been to the Mordecai Children's Garden at the Denver Botanic Gardens, you need to go. It's freaking insane. Lots of beautiful plants, huge tall trees. You can really grow anything on a green roof, is what I'm finding out. The only thing that might deter any form of plant growing on the green roof is one, water availability. Green roofs tend to be a lot more dry than on the ground, or what we call at grade. And that's just because of the nature of the environment of the green roof. It's a more extreme environment, more solar radiation hitting the green roof itself, so it dries out faster. The lightweight aggregate is incredibly porous, so water just runs right through it, through the different layers of the green roof. And then just wind, high winds usually, that's a huge factor in green roofs as well. So generally, water is a limiting factor. But also considering the plant species is important as well. We're finding out that wherever green roofs are, the most viable plants that will live on those green roofs are the plants that are native to where that green roof is. So you can bring in all of these plants that you think are beautiful and will do well. Your best bet is to grow something native. Especially if it's going to be an extensive green roof where you're not really going to be up there too often. You might be up there once every 2 to 3 months just to make sure everything is running well, you know, all the plants are doing fine. But if you're going to be up there, you know, then maybe, like, if you're going to be like an intensive green roof, then maybe you can put more plants that are maybe a little more high maintenance. Things that are purely ornamental that probably won't do extremely well if not cared for. But if you're looking for the benefits of the green roof and you want to keep it just extensive, hello, native plants. Always go native plants. That is one of the best things you can do for the green roofs if you're looking to have a green roof. Do native plants. They're gonna withstand the climate so much better, and it'll save you a headache, I'll tell ya. And then talking about sort of the benefits of green roofs as well, I said in episode 46 that they can help control water runoff, which they do. They slow down the rate in which water runs off of flat surfaces. Because they have to go through all those layers. The porous aggregate, the lightweight aggregate, slows it down as it trickles through the different layers. Plants will obviously absorb the water. And then it has to go through the drainage, water membranes, root barriers, and nowadays there's a lot of the way that a lot of the water barriers, the root bar drainage layer, my goodness, the way the drainage layers are shaped help control where the water is flowing. So one, that just slows it down, but it can help divert where the water goes, which then can be slowed down. Not only that, obviously air pollution, I mentioned that in the other episode in 46. Noise reduction, because you're essentially creating this huge blanket on top of the roof, so that helps reduce the amount of noise. Thermal regulation, I forgot what I called it before. Energy management or something like that, I think in episode 46. But thermal regulation, in the winter it keeps the hot air in in a nutshell. And in the summer, it keeps the hot air out. It also reduces the amount of solar radiation hitting the roof directly, so that obviously will increase the amount of heat that, wait, let me say that the other way. It decreases the amount of heat that the building stores. Also, there was a study done, I believe it was Dr. Alyssa Starry out of Portland, Oregon, Oregon State University, I want to say. And she found that a green roof helps contain heavy metals as well. So there's a whole bunch of different benefits that you can find off of green roofs for people in general. And like the one big benefit that I'm looking at particularly is rooftop agrivoltaics. So I'm trying to combine solar panels on a green roof that where we grow food. So essentially I'm looking to see how well food grows underneath varying types of solar panels on a green roof. That's another way of saying it, which I think makes more sense. So food production, especially in dense urban areas where it could be almost impossible for large trucks to deliver fresh food, right? The nice thing about rooftop agrivoltaics is that you're producing energy while producing food, plus you get all of these benefits from the green roof. Of course, putting up a system like this is freaking expensive. It is super, super expensive. The reason why we're doing this research is so we can create systems where it can reduce the cost, right? We're trying to find the most effective way to integrate these systems, build these green roofs so that the cost to produce them is as low as possible. I mean, over time, the long range benefits far outweigh the short term. Like the life of the roof itself is doubled. Typically, I want to say a typical roof lasts about 20 to 30 years. I could be wrong with that. I don't own a house, so I've never had to think about replacing a roof. But on a green roof, the roof itself can survive and still pretty structurally sound upwards of 80 years, which, you know, if in your lifetime, if you only have to replace your roof once, that is fantastic. All of those different benefits. And then just having access to fresh food and getting people outside and in touch with nature again. You know, this system could definitely, I don't want to use the word revolutionize because I don't know, it just sounds pretentious. But it can really have a profound effect on areas of urban population that don't have access to fresh food. You know, by 2050, two-thirds of the world's population is going to reside in a city. And now we've already reached 9 billion people. So just think of two-thirds of 9 billion. And by then, it's probably going to be 10 billion. A lot of us will be living in urban areas. So access to fresh food is going to be important. But with that, energy production is going to be incredibly important as well. A rooftop is a perfect place to put solar panels, right? But why not integrate the green roofs with them? Because you get all those benefits, you can grow food on that, and then there you go. You're producing energy, you're producing food, and you're also reaping the benefits that that the Green Roof has as well. My advisor, Dr. Jennifer Busolo, did a rough study in the city and county of Denver and basically looked at all of the suitable flat roofs, like the suitable pitch. It's about 2% pitch, and found that there were about 5,000 acres of roofs that were at that perfect angle. Now, about using only about 1,000 of that, so I think it's about 20% of the available quote unquote land roofs, I should say, to grow to put in rooftop agrivoltaics, with a modest yield, about an average yield of 5,000 pounds per acre. That's 5 million pounds of food in one growing season. Just think about the different benefits, and, like, you know, that's just an additional 5 million pounds of food that we can use to supplement the diets of people living in urban areas. Now, I'm not here to say rooftop agrivoltaics is going to get rid of at-grade farming. Nothing is ever going to get rid of at-grade farming. I can't tell you the amount of people that have said, but yeah, how is this going to replace on-the-ground farming? Like, no, it's not going to. Considering a lot of the areas are going to be, a lot of people are going to be moving to urban areas, that does mean more land is going to be available for farming. However, a lot of those ecosystems have already been degraded. So efficient land use is going to be incredibly important. And that's at grade, but as well as in cities. You know, you can really only build up. So the more effective we are with the land use, the better of an outcome we're just going to have. So basically, that's what I've learned so far in my year as a master's student and as a Green Roof professional. Obviously, there's still going to be so much more I can dive into. I'm so excited to see where this path leads. I've met so many incredible people and read so many incredible research, so much incredible research, and got to meet some of those scientists in person. And I'm excited to see where Green Roofs go and what we do with them. And so hopefully the next time I talk about Green Roofs on here, I'm hoping it's going to be earlier, because what I want is to hear about your questions on what Green Roofs are or how to get a Green Roof or what have you. And I will do my best to answer them as best as I can. If not, I have plenty of resources now that I can look at. Green Roofs are an untapped market of potential, basically. So we can do so much with them to help benefit the human population, point blank. All right, so that's it for this week. If we haven't connected yet, follow me on Instagram, instagram.com/theplantnookpodcast. You can go to anchor.fm/theplantnook to find out more ways to support the show. Or you can even send me an email at theplantnookpodcast@gmail.com. Or I think it's just, wow, it has been a while since I've done this. It's just theplantnook@gmail.com. Well, that's embarrassing. Well, that's it for this week. I hope to share more with you next time. Bye. The music you heard in this podcast is called Hard Fought Victory from Purple Planet Music. And now, a word from our sponsor.